Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another Lights On listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. Paul Revere's lantern lighter is lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, signaling the enemy is on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberty. The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air. Stay by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor of the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
The ominous they. That nondescript, shadowy, sinister they. The catch-all for any stereotype that is immediately identifiable by anyone. For, of course, everyone knows who they are. For they are always the other, the opposite to us, the enemy. Well, my friends, they are very careful not to use strong, emotionally charged labels like terrorist or terrorism to identify groups or behaviors that normally would be so identified. And the reason is that these are emotionally charged terms, which tend to encourage a certain prejudice against a certain class or group of people, and might in fact unfairly stigmatize an entire group. However, the same they desire to use the word torture to define the pro-life movement. They want to apply the UN resolution against torture to pro-life actions of the Catholic Church, for example, essentially. They, and you know who they are, they want to say that opposing abortion amounts to torture. I've read the UN Convention Against Torture. The language has to be stretched pretty thin to include opposition to abortion or even to include denying abortion. But then again, they don't seem to mind broad-brushing pro-lifers with the label of torture, while they carefully protect terrorists and terrorist-supporting organizations from being tagged with those labels. I just thought it's kind of interesting, you know. Friends, you know the left is losing the battle over abortion when they start turning to religion to help them promote it or defend it. Planned Parenthood recently sent out a letter purporting to be a statement of leaders from, quote, a number of religious traditions, end quote, that says in part, quote, many people wrongly assume that all religious leaders disapprove of abortion. The truth is that abortion is not even mentioned in the scriptures. And there are clergy and people of faith of all denominations who support women making this complex decision, end quote. Wow, Planned Parenthood turning to the clergy to help shore up defense for the murder of unborn babies in the womb by methods every sane person would have to call torture, scalding the child to death with the burning saline solution, dissecting the child into pieces with a scalpel in the womb. I welcome Planned Parenthood's challenge to debate the abortion issue on religious grounds, but the fact is, some moral issues transcend debate over what this or that religious tradition teaches, and the murder of children is certainly one of them. Or in other words, even if you were a worshiper of Moloch, and you religiously believed you should take your newborn baby to a pagan idol of Moloch, place that baby in its arms, set a fire, and offer it to the appetite of such a fiendish so-called deity. No one with an ounce of sense would argue or would agree that this argument of religion justified the murder of these babies. In fact, back in the day, as my friend David would say, when some people were so demented that they believed such sacrifices were required of the gods that they worship, our God condemned the practice and plainly declared that such a heinous behavior never even came into his mind. Bible thump alert! Bible thump alert! Get your breathing bag ready in case you go into hyperventilation and your cell phones ready to punch 911 in case your heart begins to fibrillate. Okay, you've been forewarned. I'm about to read from the Bible on public airwaves. Jeremiah 19:5. They have built also the high places of Baal to burn their sons with fire for burnt offerings unto Baal, which I commanded not, nor spake it, neither came it into my mind. Now, of course, if you're a full-blown five-pointer Calvinist, God did a real neat trick. He predestinated the pagans to throw their babies into these fires to burn them to death, but he never let it come into his own mind that any should do that for him. So I guess that was so he could condemn what he predestinated the heathen to do. And that's a bunch of nonsense. And you wonder why I say your doctrine blasphemes God. God declared that this behavior, this business of throwing babies into the burning arms of a false god like Moloch or Chemosh, or like it, the business of throwing babies into the mouths of crocodiles in the Nile as a sacrifice to their gods, that it was an abomination. Read Jeremiah 32:35, a wicked business. And there's no way to argue that it was ultimately God's will for them to do it, that in fact God predestinated that it should be, and that it served his good pleasure on some so-called higher level without charging God foolishly for this evil that arises out of the heart of men inspired by God's enemy Satan and is repugnant to the true and living God and contrary to his nature. In fact, doctrinally speaking, whatever is contrary to the nature of God is necessarily sin, and willfully orchestrating the brutal burning murders of babies is contrary to the nature of God, let me tell you, and is therefore itself sin. You charge God with sin with that nonsense. You can't double talk me like you can some folks who get blinded or bullied by the convoluted so-called higher reasoning and mysterious purposes, hidden counsels nonsense if it does not match up with what the Bible plainly and clearly reveals about God. Then it's a pack of lies, no matter how hard you work to make it sound otherwise. And the same crowd who thinks God behaves in this grotesque manner, views authority as having arbitrary power to do as it pleases, with some sort of divine right so that the people are supposed to resign themselves to the will of the king as though it was the will of God. And you don't see that you've taken the people back under Pharaoh, the God King. Anyway, so not only did God never entertain the notion of anyone offering a child sacrifice to him, neither did he ordain, foreordain, predestinate, will, or otherwise act so as to have a baby thrown into the fire to burn it to death as a sacrifice to any god. So my first religious argument against abortion is that God has no part in murdering babies other than that he will judge those who have shed the innocent blood. Second argument is that according to the Bible, a baby in the womb is a child. Therefore, murdering the baby in the womb is the murder of a child. Genesis 17:11, and the angel of the Lord said unto her, behold, thou art with child, and shalt bear a son, and shalt call his name Ishmael. Genesis 19:36, thus were both the daughters of Lot with child by their father. And here's another, Genesis 38:24, and it came to pass about 3 months after that it was told Judah, saying, Tamar, thy daughter-in-law, hath played the harlot, and also, behold, she is with child by whoredom. The Bible consistently refers to the product of conception as a child. And I selected these because each of them present a problem pregnancy. In the first, Ishmael was conceived contrary to the will of God, creating great conflict in the house of Abraham, by the way, the reverberations of which continue to come down to us today in the animosity between the house of Ishmael and the house of Isaac. And then in the second, the Moabites and the Ammonites rise from the seed of these two daughters of Lot. And again, the grief and misery brought into this world through these two sons of incest is virtually immeasurable. And this last one, Tamar, with child from her father-in-law, for heaven's sake, Judah, what a mess. Yet in every case, according to the Bible, these were children in the womb, children from conception. Jesus in the womb of Mary was a child. John the Baptist in the womb of Elizabeth was a child. And that child, John the Baptist, leaped in the womb of his mother when she came into the presence of the child in Mary's womb. Jeremiah was called into ministry while in his mother's womb. The Bible says that all of us were fashioned in the womb by our Creator. Psalm 139, are you sure you want to go there, Planned Parenthood? Are you sure you want to argue this on religious grounds? I mean, the Christian religion has at least some continuing connection with the Bible, don't you think? And when Bathsheba learned she was pregnant after her dalliance with King David, she sent to him, quote, and the woman conceived and sent and told David, and said, I am with child, end quote. 2 Samuel 11:5, and through the tears of Elisha the prophet, we hear him cry. And 2 Kings 8:12, and Haziel said, why weepeth my Lord, referring to Elisha? And he answered, because I know the evil that thou wilt do unto the children of Israel. Their strongholds wilt thou set on fire, and their young men wilt thou slay with the sword, and wilt dash their children, and rip up their women with child. And the wisest men who ever lived by the inspiration of the Spirit said, quote, as thou knowest not what is the way of the Spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child, Even so, thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all. And God said this in Isaiah 26:17, like as a woman with child that draweth near the time of her delivery. So, Planned Parenthood, you want to gather some compromised, unfaithful scoundrels who have more regard to the praise of men and who savor the things that be of men more than they do those things that be of God and more than they regard the praise of God. Men who claim the Bible as an authority, but who at the same time, like certain preachers I know, drag brothers in Christ into courtrooms contrary to the direct teaching of 1 Corinthians 6, and who disregard the clear teaching of the Bible when it suits them, while pretending to preach it every Sunday to their churches. You know, like one pastor I spoke to some years ago who said, I know the Bible teaches against abortion, but if my daughter got pregnant out of wedlock, I think I'd prefer that she got an abortion. Yeah, a real man of God there, you know. And others who are of the camp that say to Christ Jesus, Lord, Lord, and yet disregard the things that he says. And these latest examples are pastors of churches who are in other ways like our own Lighthouse Baptist Church. And yeah, you know, many Baptist pastors are as guilty in this matter as many of those you guys at Planned Parenthood rounded up to sign your letter. So if your argument is simply that not all pastors agree that abortion is the murder of an unborn child, then, well, you're right. That's true. Just as there were several religious leaders who supported Hitler, by the way. So bring it on. I welcome the Planned Parenthood's challenge to debate abortion on religious grounds. But some moral issues transcend religion. Murdering babies is one of them. I don't care how many preachers or clergy approve of allowing mothers and doctors to team up against the unborn baby and murder it. It's wrong. It's evil. It is the shedding of innocent blood. And all who partake of that evil will partake of the judgment and wrath of Almighty God against it. So, they want to apply the UN resolution against torture to the pro-life movement? Unreal. Hang on through the break. I'll be right back.
Church is not the place to be trolling for chicks, and it's not a talent show for rockers. So if you want a rock concert, call Ticketmasters. But if you're looking for a church that takes the lordship of Jesus seriously, and you can endure sound doctrine proclaimed straight from the Bible with the preaching that tells it like it is, without fear or compromise, come to the Lighthouse, where we are shining the light of God's truth to help families safely navigate through the moral storms of our day. Call 347-9887 for more information.
We Christians complain when our political leaders compromise their values, show contempt for the truth, and forsake the beliefs of our founders. Yet many Christians compromise their own values and beliefs to stay in churches that have forsaken their founders. The fact is, Christian, you are the light of the world and the salt of the earth. Haven't you noticed that every corruption we complain about in our government began in our churches? The answer is clear. Thus saith the Lord, stand ye in the ways and see, and ask for the old paths, where is the good way, and walk therein, and ye shall find rest for your souls. Jeremiah 6:16. Lighthouse Baptist Church has answered the call to return to the old paths. Will you? Join us this Sunday. Call 805-347-9887 or go to santamarialighthouse.org for more information. Devil beware. Pastor Scheibach is on the air. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheibach, pastor of the Lighthouse, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter. Lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, signaling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. You know, before I go into the Elliot Rogers commentary, let's look at a few seemingly unrelated, but in some ways related items. Here's a story about a third grade teacher that would not allow a child in her classroom to use the restroom unless she paid to potty. The kid did not want to let go of her earnings for the privilege of relieving herself. So she held it in until it involuntarily burst out. Finally, she had an accident all over herself. Humiliated and embarrassed, she nervously laughed as she explained what happened to her to her friends, but she was mortified and refused to go back to school for a whole week. Of course, Mama Bear is roaring mad. And what parent would not be? The school, or perhaps it was just this teacher, put together a system by which the children could learn the value of money and make a connection between the earning of money and work. So they created an incentive program that rewarded children with certain, you know, school money for certain achievements and productivity and so on, and that the kids could use at the end of the school year to trade in for prizes and things like that. That sounds pretty cool. Only this teacher decided that in order to curtail the amount of disruption created in her classroom by students needing to leave the class to use the restroom, that she would start charging the children some of their money to go to the restroom. It was a pay-to-potty policy. Well, anyway, these are kids, and apparently they did make the connection between the value of their school money that they earned, the work it took to earn it, and what it meant toward buying the goodies in the school store. But charging kids to use the restroom? Do some of these teachers, you know, leave their brain at home when they go to teach? Don't we have an inalienable right to potty? But really, how dumb is this? Well, not quite as dumb as what follows. A fifth grade teacher in the school district of Broward County, Florida, caught a student reading his Bible during free time and confiscated that contraband. After school, she called the parents, who were not at home, so she left a message, and good thing, because otherwise we probably would never have learned about this. On the message machine, she informed the parents that those books, referring to the Bible, religious literature, quote, were not allowed in my classroom, end quote. So why do so many public school teachers see the Bible as a threat to them, as a threat to what they're trying to achieve in the education of our own children? Liberty Council stepped in on behalf of the student, and after a huge public outcry was stirred up over this outrageous bullying of a student by a teacher over a difference of opinion about religion, the school district finally relented and issued a statement saying Bible reading during free time would be allowed. Can you believe that we're dealing with this sort of thing in America? One thing we can take from this is that when God's people submit to Him and resist this sort of devil, we triumph. Bible thump alert. Quote, submit yourselves, therefore, to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you, end quote. James 4:7. So there are some weird things going on in some of our schools. Pay for potty, blacklisting the Bible, treating it as contraband. These things don't necessarily factor into the Eliot equation. Let me explain. I made a comment during the week about what I call the Eliot commentary, referring to what I believe the recent shootings at UCSB says about culture today. And in that statement, I took a shot at education, or at least some took it that way. Some thought it was at least a tad unfair. So allow me to expand somewhat on my comments. First, here is what I said. Quote, the latest mass murdering lunatic to go on a rampage hit the University of California, Santa Barbara, very close to home. I viewed his video, his last words, and it's like this demented kid was the embodiment of the culture of hedonism promoted by Hollywood and the culture of victimhood promoted by the left. He hated women, especially, because they were not attracted to him the way he noticed they were attracted to other men, and he considers that to be a crime. And he hates the men who committed the crime, his word, by the way, of living a better life than he did. He repeatedly declared that he would be a god and get his vengeance. Now, it's all there. The product of modern education. A kid who thinks he's God, that society owes him his happiness, and that happiness is all about sex. When are you going to wake up? End quote. Well, so that's what I said. Now, I don't think my words, taken in context, can be construed to even imply that I think the public education system in our country or any country is primarily responsible for what children do, and particularly for what this young man did last week at one of our California universities. In fact, I really appreciated Mark Levin's take on this whole thing. I'm very impressed with many of our young people today. They rallied indeed to the call to arms after 9/11, as my own son and so many others that I know. And then in our church and at the colleges where I teach and preach around the country as I travel, routinely I come across some of the finest young people in America. I don't think anyone should extrapolate a conclusion about Eliot to encompass all young people today. In fact, what I did was the reverse, actually. I was extrapolating certain characteristics evident in three specific philosophical trends in our society and noticed the fruit of them in Eliot, not the other way around. What was interesting to me was the fact that this very mixed-up young man had so thoroughly imbibed the social philosophy of his culture so that he became an embodiment of it. What are these trends I'm talking about? Well, the notion that there's no God. Well, that necessarily leaves man to preside solely and alone over the ultimate questions of his life, such as, who am I? Why am I? What is right and wrong? The implied curriculum of secular society is that the God of the Bible, who doesn't exist in their opinion, is mean, cruel, arbitrary, and vindictive. Eliot portrayed these characteristics in his repeated assertions that he would be like a God. taking vengeance on all his enemies, and so forth. So being that he accepted the whole notion that there is no God, left him to be a God. And as the view of God is so miserably distorted in secular society, to be vindictive, the image of God that Eliot adopted was of a petty, mean, and vindictive God. The second trend is to suggest no one else has the right to have more than anyone else. Eliot repeatedly complained of the injustice committed against him by others for having what was denied to him. He called it a crime. And the trend today among the they I spoke of in the last segment, is that if someone else has something you desire, then everyone around you has a responsibility and an obligation to see that you get it too. In their distorted view, the world is unjust if it does not guarantee to everyone an equal share in the pleasantries of life. This notion that you are a victim of the oppression of the haves, if you happen to be or perceive yourself to be among the have-nots, and that it's a crime for anyone to have something you want unless you get to have it too, is certainly, you got to admit, something fostered on the left in our country today. This is something being taught to our children. And I thought it was interesting to see it so fully embodied in Eliot. Finally, the trend to sexualize everything is disturbing and obviously very prevalent. I probably don't need to elaborate on it. It's thrown into our faces constantly. Everyone seems to be wanting to measure one another by their sexuality or lack thereof. The preoccupation of Hollyweird and much of what goes on in our schools revolves around sex. We sexualize our children from a very young age, and this damages them emotionally, psychologically, and spiritually. It puts all manner of stress on male-to-female relationships and at all ages, creating complications in relationships since there's a constant expectation and assumption that somehow, in some way, it's all about someone's sexuality. And what I heard on Eliot's statement was a perfect blend of these three trends in our society that virtually define, in varying degrees, the culture of education in our public schools, or certainly most of them. So I'm not saying that these trends in educational philosophy produced Eliot and programmed him to kill. I believe in free will. Eliot was, in the end of the day, shaped by his choices, choices he made of his own free will. Nothing in his chemistry, secreted by any physical gland, compelled him to thrust a knife into three of his male friends and then take a gun and go out to shoot and kill as many women as he could, except evil choices made of his own free will. However, something caused him to see these choices as acceptable. Nevertheless, Eliot went on a murdering rampage because he chose to do it. No amount of gun laws, knife laws, or traffic laws, you know, he killed with each of these, would have kept this from happening. But the question is it possible that if this kid's craziness had been incubating in an environment that provided a very different worldview, one where he was not encouraged to see himself as a victim, not encouraged to measure himself by others sexually, not encouraged to resent others having what he did not have, well, who knows? You see what I mean? Perhaps the symptoms of this diseased mind would have manifested somewhat differently if his disease had been incubating in a different worldview environment. The sin nature in every one of us resides in our flesh, according to the Bible, so that we know that the impulse towards sin is natural in every man. How that disease, if you will, manifests in symptoms, however, can be greatly affected by the environment in which it is incubated. Now, this does not make the environment the cause. It does, however, acknowledge it as a contributor. At the end of the day, it comes down to personal choices or free will, which is another thing, by the way, that the secularists are trying to trend out of our society. Now, here's an article in Scientific American titled "The World Without Free Will" by Asim Sharif and Kathleen Voss. Like Calvinists, some scientists today argue that free will is a myth, that human beings do what they do because they are compelled to do it, not because they choose to do it. What these writers did is look at it from the point of view of what happens when people do not see themselves as having a free will. The conclusion was that consistently, test after test, showed that people who perceived themselves as not having free will consistently made poor moral choices for themselves, while at the same time, when people were heightened in their awareness that they had a free will, and therefore were accountable for their choices, these consistently made better moral choices. Now, these writers summarized their findings by saying, quote, "Our research into this issue offers inklings of an answer, some of which are disturbing. In particular, we see signs that a lack of belief in free will may end up tearing society apart," end quote. In the end, these writers do not take a clear position on the question. And I'm not doing a book report here. What their tests showed, however, is interesting to me and to my topic. They said, quote, As our research has suggested, the more people doubt free will, the more lenient they become toward those accused of crimes, and the more willing they are to break rules themselves and harm others to get what they want. Yeah. So, did Elliot Rogers act on free will? Is he responsible for his choices? Or did he act according to some mysterious hidden counsel of his creator and so was foreordained to go on this rampage? Did Elliot act as he was programmed to act by a combination of some disorder of his mind and a culture that incubated that disorder so it grew into a grotesque monstrosity so that he had no choice, really? He was compelled to act in the way that he did? Or did Elliot make his choices and then gratuitously use the props and supports provided in a culture that implies endorsement and justification for his arguments that society owed happiness to him, that women were objects for his sexual pleasure, that college was supposed to be a time when you experience all these things and it was owed to him? Where did he get these notions? And Elliot supported his sinful and wicked hatred against those who had what he did not have with these arguments that were provided to him. I believe the last one is the case. You see, there have always been wicked Cains out there who would kill their own brother out of jealousy. The blame for these murders falls entirely upon Elliot Rogers alone. However, the culture in which his diseased mind and heart incubated certainly contributed to the way he manifested his evil intentions and the extent that he went, and the rationale, certainly, that he used to justify it. So, while there will always be Elliot Rogers and Cains out there, those who teach there is no God, that each person is his own God, that the concept of deity is cruel, vicious, and vindictive, that there is no right and wrong, really, and that we are all measured by our sexuality, and that no one has a right to have anything deprived to another, that kind of thing makes all of us more vulnerable to these monsters. It might not make the monster, but it certainly feeds it. And that's what I meant by my Elliot commentary. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch, and now you call and let me know that you see they are on. You call 1-888-770-8000. That's 1-888-770-8000, and say lights on if you agree with what I'm saying, lights off if you disagree. Or go to our website at www.thebrainmassageshow.com, all lowercase, one word, you know the drill. www.thebrainmassageshow.com. And on the right, you'll see there a place where you can select lights on, lights off, and write to me as long a message as you like. And I respond to all my email messages. And when you call and ask me to call you back, I will make every effort to do so. God bless you. God save America. And I'll see you in church.
King David wanted to bring the Ark of God into Jerusalem. God's prophet encouraged him and told him it was God's will. For this very special project, David commissioned the building of a brand new cart to carry the precious Ark of God. As they rolled down the road, they hit a bump. To keep the ark from falling off the cart, the driver reached out and touched it. This brought death to the driver. David became afraid of the Lord. He sent the ark away and he went home troubled. Later, David understood from the scripture that the only proper way to transport the ark was for the priests to carry it. He decided to try it again, and this time he did it according to God's instructions. And everything worked out beautifully. David was a good man with good motives, but his plan was flawed. Many good men with good motives are attempting to do a good work, but they're doing it the wrong way, and it has brought spiritual death to our churches. Are you in a new cart church? Come to an old path church this Sunday. Call 347-9887 or go to santamarialighthouse.org for more information.
Here's the deal. If you would consider it an honor to participate in the ministry of Pastor Scheibach and the Brain Massage Show, then you're invited to go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make a donation or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. For a complete brain massage experience, tune in Saturdays at 7:30 a.m. The Brain Masseur is preparing to massage your brain